Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning, and welcome to Speak Up. It is Monday, July 21st, and this is our first live show on the Monday slot for a few weeks. I've been away on holiday, and Peter's been kind of on holiday here in Vancouver as well.
Well, it's I live off in a state, so I'm always on holiday. I sort of on holiday when I prepare a bit for the show, I guess.
But. Right. We got some good stuff lined up for you today. A bit of a beer and transit theme, which you'll see when we play some of the stories.
I've already heard this before, anyway, on the other Speak Ups.
That's okay.
We're hearing it again.
Nothing wrong with that. What are you going to be talking about today, Peter?
Well, we left off. Yeah. I wanted to make a point that South Africa should never have been made to pay for the apartheid debt.
Mm-hmm.
So I've gotten some. There's one YouTube posting. It's from 12 years ago. It's called Jubilee South African Apartheid Debt. But I also went to a few other sources too about the situation, and Wikipedia has an entry under South Africa debt. So I'm going to put it all together to make a statement. And Stephen Fan, I don't know, Stephen Fan sort of thinks they were, what happened, 2008, too big to fail kind of thing, I guess, because it was sort of reprehensible what a lot of the established, including the World Bank and the IMF were doing mm-hmm. in the 80s with the apartheid regime lending them money. So I'm going to be covering that with my notes and my tablet.
All right. Well, we'll be coming to that at about 15 minutes to the top of the hour. Don't forget, Democracy Now! Is coming up at 11 a.m. today after this show. We're not going to have a new episode of Gardening with Embark today, just with the extended break. We were not able to get one done for today, but we will bring you a reprise episode, and I hope you enjoy that. We're going to start off with a bit of a story from Danny Nesvadarani. Before we do that, I've been traveling. I went to Europe, visited family in Norway for a few weeks, but not entirely out of the loop on things happening in the world. Anything shocking to you? Are we able to be shocked anymore with the things that go on under the Trump administration?
Well, I mean, one thing is that the United States does not have a trade deficit with Brazil. Mm-hmm. It's still putting tariffs on it. And then there was some, you know, those morning shows, Meet the Press and so on. It mm-hmm. was not Harold Lupkin, but it was somebody else trying to justify. And the reporter sort of said, well, we don't have a trade deficit with Brazil. Why is there tariffs against mm-hmm. them? He said, oh, well, we're doing America first. So, there you, I mean, he was some other flunky of the administration.
Right. Well, they're all pretty shameless in terms of they're willing to say whatever it is to stay on message, regardless of logic or the facts.
Yeah, so, I mean, the excuse of a trade deficit does not cover Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a media thing. Stephen Colbert has gotten 10 months to go on the show. I don't know if you heard about that.
Yes, I did. And in its way, not surprising, you know, you know, officially, you know, CBS Paramount, who run the show, you know, are saying that it's just like a business decision, and you know, the show loses money every year. But I read some articles on the weekend that, you know, challenge that idea, because they said they lose $40 million on.
I don't think it does, because now, mind you, what is brought forth is that Fox News has somebody who starts at 10 p.m. or something, mm-hmm. and kind of overlaps a bit, and they say he's got 4 million, Stephen Colbert only gets 2.5 million.
I've heard that Stephen Colbert is biggest in his time slot, though. And, of course, the other thing is, you know, broadcast numbers are only part of the story. You know, all the different segments from these shows all get posted to social media, including YouTube, where they also pick up viewers and advertising as part of that. And so that's – anyway, I read a thing where, you know, CBS said that they're losing $40 million a year in the show. But people sort of worked out that – you know, it doesn't. Nobody knows exactly what the budget for the show is, but they'd have to. It doesn't. The math doesn't work out for them to be losing that kind of money. And it's.
Yeah, it doesn't. Doesn't. So it's sort of. I saw 60 Minutes on Global. It's on from midnight to 1 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
for some reason, but they didn't have anything about it because it's the same network they had.
Yeah, but they just had their own, you know, controversy where. You know, because there is part of what this all stems from is that Trump is suing CBS over an interview that aired on 60 Minutes, where they edited a bit of an interview with Kamala Harris, and Trump is claiming that it was, you know, an unfair edit, and you know,
election interference.
But you know, anyone who's news people who've seen the raw tape and the edited tape say it's just a normal. Yeah. I mean, here we are in broadcasting. You know, you know, when you can, you edit things for brevity and clarity. It's standard. You know, I mean, part of the ethical thing is you don't edit things to. You are very careful not to edit things to change meaning, but you know, you clean it up. You take out. You know, when someone repeats themselves or cycles back on the same thing so that it's repetitive, you take those things out so that you're not going to bore your listener. Or you take a long interview and you bring it down shorter to hit the key points. That's standard. I do think there's something really weird about the idea that at the same time that the President of the United States is basically being granted immunity from just about any kind of anything, criminal prosecution, is also able to turn around and massively sue media outlets for just about any kind of coverage that he doesn't like. Because he also was threatening, I don't know if it's followed through, they filed it in court, but apparently there were no details filed with it, you know, a lawsuit against the Washington Post because of a story of an Epstein story that they ran last week that mentioned Trump. And so, you know, he's using these lawsuits to try and punish media outlets that give coverage he doesn't like. And in some cases, you know, it seems like, as we see in the, you know, the CBS situation where they paid the money in the 60 Minutes settlement, and it would seem that getting rid of Colbert as another sort of surrender to Trump are giving in.
Yeah, no, it's he's just doing whatever he can to do. You know what? I'm going to do a little bit of. We don't have visuals, but just wait. I'm coming back.
Okay.
For something in my bag.
All right.
I didn't get that.
All right.
No, wait a minute. I want to say this.
Okay,
this is,
go for it.
This is the Maple Ridge newspaper.
Yep.
And they
which
were
is,
saying.
Which is called? The Maple?
Oh, the Maple Ridge Pit Metals News.
Awesome.
Okay, so this is somebody from Canada going across the border. The border guard wanted to know her feelings about Trump. The woman told the truth about her negative feelings regarding convicted felon President Donald Trump. Consequently, she was banned from entering the United States, but for 5 years. So what's going on. And this is a letter to the editor, and it got published in the Maple Ridge Pit Minnows News. So that's the extent that they're doing censorship now. Mm-hmm. And they asked her what her opinion was, and we're supposed to be favorable, I guess, when we go over the border. And well, they ask us our opinion on Donald Trump.
I guess the best answer is I don't have an opinion on that.
Yeah. Okay. So that.
But then they, you know, I guess they could accuse you of lying. I transited through the United States on my trip, going and coming, and they didn't ask any questions like that. Fortunately. But, of course, we were only just passing through the airport. Yeah.
Well, I just thought I would add that about what's going on because how he's using censorship. I mean, this whole – because I think it's – yeah, you kind of said it, but I'll just reinstate probably what you said. That Paramount and CBS are doing some sort of a merger and they need government approval or
presidential approval.
So one suspects getting rid of Stephen Colbert kind of makes it – easier to do anyway,
and it speaks to a certain problem with their system down there that the president can interfere in such things for political reasons, you know. I mean, yeah. The stuff like that should be happening through institutional administrative processes that are operating outside of political influence, and while that's not always possible, you know, and even in the Canadian system, generally they do, but there's an allowance for the minister representing the government to sometimes interfere, or not interfere, but, you know, have some sort of final approval. So it's not completely outside the realm, but at least it operates within a sort of context. And if a minister stepped in and said, we're not going to allow this merger or this action or this other thing to happen, they'd have to justify it within the context of the legislation that sets that up. That doesn't seem to be what's happening here with the Trump's situation. It's just he can hold that over their heads as a threat, implied or not, and use that to try and influence their behavior, which is just basically the, you know, the definition of corruption.
Yes, it is.
So one other thing I was going to mention, I'll save this story for a little later. Let's get on with our first story here. This is Danny's report about people in Marpole a little concerned about changes to transit.
This is Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. On July 14th, Movement YVR, a public transit advocacy group based in Metro Vancouver, hosted a community discussion on the city's planned increase of bus lanes on Granville Street in the Marpole neighborhood of Vancouver. The side lanes of Granville Street in Marpole are primarily used as street parking. City Council's current plan is to replace this parking with designated bus lanes. So while the current plan does not involve increasing the level of service in Marpole, it serves to boost the efficiency of current bus routes within the area. The event was hosted at the Marpole Neighborhood House and was attended by community members that were both for and against the slated expansion. Before the event, CJSF was able to speak with Dennis Agar, Executive Director of Movement YVR, to learn more about the purpose for the event, considering that this planned expansion had already been confirmed a year prior.
And it's really meant to be an open dialogue. You know, there's going to be representatives from the Business Association here. Historically, they've been a bit opposed to bus lanes on Granville. They're really concerned about the parking in front of their businesses. You know, they're really sensitive to anything that might pose a threat to their livelihoods, which is understandable. And so this event is really to try and just get everyone into the same room and have a chat. And see, you know, share each other's perspectives.
Dennis Agar then went on to explain why Movement YVR's advocacy efforts were still important, even though this plan has already been approved by Vancouver City Council.
Anything can always be overturned, I would say. It comes down to politics, right? That you put the right pressure on the right politician and things can be overturned. I've seen lots of transit projects be overturned at the last minute. You know, the Evergreen extension of the Millennium Line was going to be light rail until it was overturned. There was going to be 3 light rail lines in Surrey until it was overturned. And then it was, you know, SkyTrain. So anything can happen.
At the end of our conversation, Agar had this to say about public transit usage within Marpole.
One thing I haven't mentioned to you yet, you'll hear it in the presentation, is that Marpole is one of the highest transit-using neighborhoods of any neighborhood in Metro Vancouver. So basically behind like Joyce and I think Metrotown. Marpole is number 3 for the highest level of transit use in Metro Vancouver. And that's remarkable, especially because a lot of people in Marpole aren't that close to the Canada line, right? Like a lot of people are walking 25 minutes to the Canada line if they're doing it, or they're getting on the 10 or the 100 on Granville, but it's so stuck in traffic that, you know, we would love to see more people walking and going near the shops on Granville, but they're only going to do that if the buses are more reliable.
As Agar had alluded to, members of the Marple Business Association, who are opposed to this planned expansion, were also in attendance. This included Claudia Leroy, the executive director of the Business Association, who also gave a presentation on why she believed that this transit plan and the street parking that it would remove would be bad for Marple's local businesses. After the event, we spoke with Leroy, who had this to say regarding her stance on the current planned transit expansion in the Marpole neighborhood.
Our small business members depend on the local community and people coming to shop here. We are not against transit. We are against the doubling of removal of on-street parking for little gain for transit users and no actual increase in transit buses or service.
We then asked Leroy if there were any public transit upgrade models for the Marpole neighborhood that she believes would be most ideal for local businesses.
Well, I think the spirit of Councillor Kirby Young's original motion that was adopted by Council was for staff, city staff and TransLink staff, to find a balance between transit needs and business. And the proposals that we have been presented with by staff, both at the city and TransLink, only present one-sided proposals about servicing transit and speeding up buses to the detriment of the Marple community, to the detriment of the Marple small businesses that exist here, without any consideration or regard for ensuring the vitality of the small businesses and the commercial district and the pedestrian atmosphere for Granville Street. It's a very one-sided proposal, and we have been trying with staff and council to find the ways that we can work together so that it isn't completely one-sided and achieve the balance that is necessary to keep a local economy vibrant while also trying to improve transit, which our community does need.
While the Business Association of Marpole is continuing their opposition on the proposed bus lane expansion, at the time of this recording, Vancouver City Council is still going forward with the planned bus lane expansion through the Marpole neighborhood. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. This segment would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative.
We have another transit-oriented story coming up
about drinking beer with a transit label.
Yep. So let's give this one a listen, and we'll be back with some weather after this report.
This is Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. TransLink, the transportation agency of Metro Vancouver, recently announced a collaboration with a local business in Port Coquitlam, BC. This local business is Patina Brewing, a brewing company that has partnered with TransLink to release a public transit-themed craft beer aptly titled The Platform Pilsner. A novel collaboration, but one that TransLink hopes is able to inspire other unique collaborations with local businesses throughout Metro Vancouver. To learn more about why TransLink decided on this collaboration with Patina Brewing, we spoke with John Jang, TransLink's media relations advisor. When we asked why TransLink decided to go into this direction, here is what he had to say.
It's a really, really good question. So first of all, you know, TransLink as an organization, we're always trying to think of new ways, creative ways to generate a little bit of revenue that doesn't involve us having to increase the fares for customers. And with that in mind, our CPMP team, which is our corporate partnerships and program team, they essentially are tasked with coming up with creative ways to find other organizations, businesses, or opportunities to find these revenue streams. As another example, I'll mention that we introduced Amazon lockers on TransLink SkyTrain stations and transit hubs a couple of years back, again, to also realize that customers could use this as a benefit when you're working and going to school, you want to pick up a package along the way home. It's really convenient to do it right at your SkyTrain station or transit hub. So they kind of came to us and said, hey, we have this idea of a partnership with Patina, and we think it'd be a really great way to do it. And I just immediately thought, well, that seems like an excellent idea. Let's see what we can do. And so we were able to partner with Patina and license the intellectual property for TransLink and kind of work together to create the platform Pilsner. It's, I think, the first of its kind program, not just in Canada, but possibly in North America, when you think about a transit agency doing something like this. So we were really proud of the fact that it's kind of progressive. And come on, let's be real. Metro Vancouver is known for a lot of different things, including a very strong craft beer scene.
Later on, we asked him if this collaboration opens the door for other TransLink-themed products, whether that be a TransLink sneaker or any other array of TransLink food items or specialty drinks, like the one that's seen in this collaboration with Patina Brewing.
You know what? I guess never say never. I don't know that anything is in the works for a TransLink sneaker, though that would be a pretty cool idea. Obviously, if a sneaker head is listening right now, I'm sure they'd love that. But for us, again, it's just trying to find creative ways to generate a little bit of that revenue. So the Amazon partnership with the lockers, again, being a really good example of us doing something like that. Obviously, it's not like a TransLink locker. It's still an Amazon branded locker. Amazon is the one that provides those lockers. We just give them the space and the lease to do it. But it gives us a little bit of money where if we hadn't done that partnership, we wouldn't be getting that money. And all of that money still goes to support and fund operational services across Metro Vancouver. So, you know, I think if you've got other brilliant ideas like TransLink sneakers, TransLink snacks, food, nothing is off the table as long as it makes sense for us as an organization, for our customers, and also for the organizations that we'd be partnering with.
We then went on to ask if this project came from a desire from TransLink to diversify its revenue streams.
Yeah, I think it 100% was. Our CPMP team, you know, their task is to be creative and think outside the box and find ways to generate that revenue. But all of that is still because we need to find ways to make sure that our operating funding is strong and flush. Now, obviously, a large bulk of that still comes through partnerships and funding that we receive from government partners. And we've got many different teams that are constantly working with partners at every level of government to get that kind of funding so that we don't have to worry about, you know, reducing services or anything of that nature. Thankfully, our 2025 investment plan was secured this year, where we can feel pretty good about it over the next couple of years. But trying to find new ways to get that revenue. TransLink, again, is getting into real estate development, right? So that's another creative way that we're doing this and looking at other transit agencies around the world that have done this and looking at it and thinking that's a model that we could emulate here in Metro Vancouver. So it's basically the task of having to come up with all these different creative ways to generate a little bit of revenue. And I would say, like, there's never too little. Like, any bit that we can get through programs like the collaboration with Patina Brewing, it just goes to help everyone, whether it's us having to keep the services or the customers who depend on having those services every single day.
We then discussed whether TransLink hopes that this collaboration inspires other public transit providers to collaborate with local businesses in their communities.
Yeah, you know, I can't say with certainty that other transit agencies will exactly follow suit, but they might at least be inspired by, like, the model, like allowing transit agencies to permit the use of their intellectual property and working with local businesses. It doesn't necessarily have to be craft beer. It might not even be beer at all. It might be other products. I don't know for certain. But I do think that the transit industry is a very tight-knit community. And so what happens in Metro Vancouver with TransLink, for example, is definitely viewed and observed by transit agencies, not just across Canada, but across North America and around the world. And so we know that if there are conversations happening, maybe somebody picks up a phone or writes an email and reaches out to someone at TransLink and says, hey, like, tell us a little bit more about how you guys got into this, because we're thinking about doing it in, like, I don't know, Berlin, or maybe in some places in Hong Kong. Like, we don't know. But I hope we have had that impact with this project. We do know that it's progressive. We know that it's raised a lot of eyebrows, not just from people living in Metro Vancouver, but across the country. And I think that's what makes this such a unique story for TransLink. We didn't just do this because we wanted to get our names out there for the purpose of being like the first of its kind. We also wanted to support a local business with Patina, a great local community brewery in Port Coquitlam. And especially now during a time where obviously a lot of things are happening politically, economic uncertainty is felt by every Canadian right now. And so that also played a big role into it too. So if other organizations and other agencies want to kind of follow the TransLink model here, we hope they do so with the mindset of wanting to support their local communities as well.
Once again, that was our conversation with John Jang, the media relations advisor for TransLink, on the company's new collaboration with Patina Brewing for the Platform Pilsner. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby.
And now a bit of a story. Continuing the beer theme, this is a story from our friends up in northern BC in Smithers about a small local brewery that has won a national craft brewing award and bringing some another big achievement to that small town, which was also recently in the news recently when the world's most famous skateboarder Tony Hawk showed up for the launch of their new skateboard park. But here, here's a story about another small town success from our friends in the north.
This is CICK News. Today on CICK News, Smithers Brewing Company, only 7 years old this year, was awarded Canadian Brewery of the Year at the Canadian Brewing Awards in Vancouver last week, where the very best in craft breweries across the country gather to have their beer judged by a panel of industry experts. This year's competition featured more than 1,600 entries from nearly 270 breweries spanning 50 categories from traditional English ale to spicier offerings like chili beer. Smithers Brewing Company won bronze in the Irish Stout category, silvers in the Creative, Scotch Ale, and Berliner Weiss and Gose category, and two golds came home to Smithers in the Irish Red as well as English Mild and Brown Ale category. Here's Smithers Brewing Company's head brewer, Cam McKeegan, talking to CICK News last Tuesday.
We didn't figure out, like, until at the gala when the awards were being doled out, one of the organizers pulled me aside and he's like, have you figured it out yet? And like, no. Figured what out? And, brewery of the year. Do you have a speech ready? I'm like, do I have a what? My name's Cam McKeegan. I am the head brewer and part owner of Smithers Brewing Company.
Okay, Canadian Brewery of the Year. What do you think that this does for, one, the brewery, and then two, for Smithers to bring home a title like that?
I mean, for the brewery, it kind of puts us on the craft beer map. Us and a lot of our friends up here are often overlooked in the craft beer scene just because we're so damn hard to get to.
Yeah.
So it does kind of, like, at the very least, there are a lot of people around Canada right now and in BC, you know, looking at Google Maps and being like, oh, that's where Smithers is. But yeah, I don't know, it just kind of, like, both for the town and for the brewery, it sort of just puts us on the map. And for the town, it does it about a week after Tony Hawk was here. So it's just like all of a sudden people are not only going to be Googling where is Smithers, but they're like, what are they doing up there?
How likely did you think it was going to be that you were going to, was it six?
It was six medals. And the brewery of the year is just like, it goes to the brewery that brings home the most individual medals. So like, we didn't know we'd won six. So we didn't go into it kind of like, oh, yeah, yeah, I think we got this in the bag. The Canadian Brewing Awards, they kind of give you the nod, and they're sort of like, hey, it would be a good idea for you to attend. And also, if you could bring a couple of these beers, and they list the beers, it would be like, you know, it would be beneficial. We'd really appreciate it if you could bring some of these beers for us all to drink. And so that kind of tells you that, like, those beers have won awards. But they kind of didn't give us much more than that. We didn't figure out... Like,